Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, Gary Owen, comedian. Nice guy, fun episode, easygoing dude. Really interesting story, by the way. If you're thinking about getting married, or you are married, you probably should listen to this episode. Very, very fascinating story with him. This is important. Go to thesdrshow.com/vote. That's thesdrshow.com/vote. And vote for the SDR Show for the AVN Awards. Me and Big J want to go. And if we get enough nominations, we are going to go and be a part of the AVNs. It's been Big J's dream for a long time. So go to thesdrshow.com/vote, and you can put in our name and then our Twitter handle, which is at thesdrshow. And if we get enough votes, we get nominated, and I think we go to the whole shindig, which could be fun. And remember, we do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live, or just listen where you are right now or on YouTube. Spread the love. And here it is right now, the Gary Owen episode of The SDR Show. Go vote.
This is the intro to the shit show.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
This is the hit show. Show me a tit show.
Please, someone walk the
hole. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know.
The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me for the first time in a bit, it's Bill Schultz. How are you, buddy?
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Do you want to show that cigarette to everybody that in 2022 you're fine smoking on camera?
I'm celebrating Ralph's upcoming half marathon in Iceland. Yeah.
While we're taping this, I'm leaving in a week to go run a half marathon in Iceland, where, by the way, before I introduce our guest, it's hard to believe because I started running 2 years ago. I could not run for 30 seconds without feeling like I was going to die.
That's impressive.
I was 85, 90 pounds overweight. And now I am, you know, almost all gone, that child that I was carrying around with me, basically. And I'm running half marathon. This is crazy. Your body wants to adapt. Anyway, we will move on. So right now, this dude, it's really fascinating to me because every once in a while I run into people. I'm like, I know the face. I feel like I know who he is. And I look him up. My God, this guy is so fucking popular. It is insane. And although Big J's not here this week, very similar origin stories. And we'll get into it a little bit. It is Gary Owen. You can follow him at Gary Owen Comedy, GaryOwen.live. His recent special was called Black Famous. We'll get into that as well. Here's what I like. Owen was named both funniest serviceman in America and funniest black comedian in San Diego. That is just great. Yes. Twofer right there. It is Gary Owen. How are you, buddy? Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'd like to say, which I'm sure you hear this all the fucking time, especially from old fucks like me, the first thing you'd Google is Gary Owens, who was the VO guy for Laughing, and not you.
He got an S. I don't have an S.
Right. He has the extra S. But if you type in the Owens instead of Owen, I was like, because I felt like, why do I know the name Owens like that? And I'm like, oh, he was the voice guy on Laughing. And he would always say, I'm Gary Owens. And that's why it stuck with me. So has that happened ever in your life where you go do a show and they prepped for Gary Owens and not Gary Owen?
Well, he also was the voice of Space Ghost.
Oh shit. Really? I didn't know that. I guess
that's bearing the lead right there. Yeah.
You inadvertently learn things about him because they keep confusing you with him. So that's how that happened. But did that ever happen where you go do an interview and like, so what was it like working on the set of Laughing?
No, but I tell you, I've had some old, it's true. At least 3-4 times at the airport, TSA agents that are old, they'll see my ID. And then they'll be like, hey, there used to be a Gary Owens. I don't know if you know who he is. Yeah. They're like, yeah. They go, he was a comedian on Laughing. And I'm like, oh, God.
I don't know if he was. What is he technically a comedian? Maybe he was. I don't know. I just know him as a voiceover guy. But maybe he was a comedian. I don't fucking know. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I said that your origin story is very similar to my regular co-host, Big J Okerson, in that Big J made his bones, as they call it, in the black comedy circuit. Right. And you did as well. The only difference is you fucking blew up in the black comedy circuit so much so that your most recent special is called Black Famous. And I, is it fair to say that the much larger portion of your audience is Black people? Is that fair?
Yeah, I'd say probably 70-30.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah.
When did you start realizing that, not only, because I know you started, because Jay, that's how he started in the Black circuit, right? So is that where you started as well? And it just took off and you said, I'm staying here? Or did you somehow find out, oh, this, my style or brand of comedy is working better in urban markets, so let me pivot there?
Well, I mean, when I first started in San Diego, there's only one room. It was the Comedy Store in La Jolla. Mm-hmm. But I was in the military, so a couple of Black guys I was stationed with knew I wanted to do stand-up. They were telling me about all these one-nighters, but you had to go to the hood. Mm-hmm. And none of, you wouldn't see any white comics there. I just wanted to get on stage, and I was so naive, being from a small town in Ohio and everything. I was like, I didn't even realize I was in the hood, so to speak. You know, you're just driving, parking, walking into a venue, and then you're performing. And then that's how I started to get my name. And then my first TV break was on BET.
Right.
So like any comedian, you get a chance to be on TV, especially in the late 90s, where we didn't have YouTube and TikTok and quote unquote build your own brand. You were kind of at the mercy of the TV execs. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I would have went on Telemundo if I spoke Spanish. If they would have offered me a shot, I was just trying to get on TV like every other comic.
Right, right. That's really wild. It's funny because, you know, that Jay has a clips of him on some BET special or something like that. I forget what it was, a very long time ago. But it's a weird concept to say, because Black comic or mainstream, I don't know what you'd call that. It's just strange that people even feel the need to make the segmented difference. It feels like it's forcing a racial divide. But there is something inherently, would you say, different from Black comedy and white comedy? Is that the word? I don't even fucking know what the right way to call it is.
It's more of a culture thing. Mm. I would say, like, culturally, it's different. Like, I always say, like, your chances of getting booed are decreased greatly in front of an all-white audience.
Right, right.
But at the same time, you're not going to get the response when a joke really hits in front of an audience.
Right, like, right, right.
The feeling you get when you can be in a theater and have, like, you know, 3,000-4,000 Black people all going nuts over a joke, I go, it's hard to top that energy.
That's cool. It's funny. You know, it's funny because now of social media, this won't happen. But let's go back. You've been in the business a while. Let's go back, you know, a decade or so. Was there times where you would show up to do an interview on a morning show and like, no, we want the Black guy. Is that Gary Owen? Who the fuck are you? Like,
Sure.
Has that happened a lot in the beginning? Because there was a TV show based on that where a guy had a radio show that was in an urban market and no one knew he was white. That was like the concept of a sitcom in the 80s. So did that ever happen to you?
Not radio show, but I'll tell you a funny story. I went to Guam early in my career, and Charlie Sheen and Don Johnson was in Guam opening up a Planet Hollywood.
Oh, and my God.
They heard that Def Jam was in town doing a show.
Okay.
They didn't know that I was the guy from Def Jam that was there for the show. The promoter was Black and I'm white. We walk into this after party for Planet Hollywood, and here comes Don Johnson walking up to the promoter. How was the show? Was it good? All right, man. Heard you're a funny guy.
That's really funny.
He's been talking to the promoter.
That's fucking great. That is really great.
Meanwhile, Charlie Sheen's speaking Gaelic with blood pouring out of his nose, I'm sure.
How was Guam, by the way? I've never been to Guam.
When Charlie Sheen was in his heyday of being Charlie Sheen, because the small conversation I had with him that night, there was these grapes and they were big. And I was like, he comes over right when I'm grabbing a grape. And I was like, man, how big are these grapes? And he was like, maybe the grapes are the size they've always been and we're just getting smaller. And I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Jeez,
and then, I want whatever blood Guam's producing.
I know, but then this is what, this is how charming Charlie Sheen is. Now I know why he's Charlie Sheen, because I literally was telling him when I left, I was like, hey, man, I'm going to be at the Comedy Store next Thursday at 8:00, man, if you can come through. And I remember him telling me, he goes, I'll be there. I really thought he was going to be there. He never showed up.
You know, but that doesn't make him cool. That makes him douchey. That makes him douchey. If he really showed up, that would make him cool.
Yeah. By the way, I almost, I almost kind of remember, because, you know, Charlie Sheen is a big baseball guy, so much so that he got into steroids while filming Major League. But I kind of remember him being a Reds fan. Am I wrong on that? Like, you're
huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a huge Reds fan. Rob Lowe's a huge Reds fan.
Yes.
We're a couple of
yeah,
them.
He's Ohio boy.
I'll give you my worst brag of this episode. You ready? Me and Charlie Sheen, Eskimo brothers, wiener cousins, whatever you want to call them. I don't like it. Oh. It's not something to brag about, but it's true.
So you're saying you've got the HIV.
Probably several strains. Probably several strains. Yeah.
Something Guam related.
Yeah. By the way, so you have a podcast also. This is gonna segue into like the me doing my research, the big story of you that happened, but I want to start with the podcast. They had to get some podcast, right? And the last episode you've done as of a few days ago when I was doing the research.
I heard it was
with Godfrey, who Godfrey's on my network. I own Gas Digital and Godfrey does his show on my network. And I like the whole story that apparently there was some sort of beef or he thought you were an asshole. And somehow on this episode, you broke bread. Is that fair? A fair assessment?
Yeah. Comedian Lunell was the buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, like, me and Godfrey had a TV show together with Shaq about 10 years ago called Upload on True TV.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, man, our energy was not matching up. So I always would say, like, I don't know what it is with me and Godfrey. I go, I got nothing bad to say about him. The guy's never bad-mouthed me. He's never done anything personal to me. It's just for whatever reason, we weren't vibing on that show, and it was apparent.
So that's the first time you met him, and from the moment you met him, it just wasn't happening.
I knew him beforehand, okay. But when you're working on a TV show, you're with somebody 12 hours a day, every day pretty much, and we're on location in Orlando. It's not like we're going home. We're going back to the same hotel. We're getting picked up in the morning together.
Mm-hmm.
It just, nothing he did, I don't think anything I did was that bad. It was just like, we just weren't vibing. For whatever reason, it happens.
Right.
Well, but wasn't part of it that you had pitched a sitcom to Fox at the same time, and basically two episodes of your True TV show, you would have gotten paid. Two episodes would have been an entire season, or vice versa, for the Fox thing, and you couldn't do both. They wouldn't let you, and you were pissed off about that. You kind of taught me a little bit about the business and hearing that anecdote.
Yeah, I went into Fox and pitched the TV show. So I filmed the pilot. Like, I'll put it in a timeline. I filmed the pilot for True TV in April. And that winter, right after that summer, I went and pitched the show to Fox. Mm-hmm. And my agent told me, they go, you know, if you shoot this pilot, you're rolling the dice on going out and pitching a show. And it's really hard to get a put pilot or a TV show on the air. People think it's simple, but it's not. So that summer when I went to Fox and pitched amongst the other networks, Fox bought it in the room. They were like, you know, we're gonna go write the script. And I was like, no way. So as we're negotiating with Fox, all of a sudden True TV came in and was like, yeah, we're not letting Gary out of his deal. I didn't need out of the deal. I just needed them to go to second position to say, hey, we're gonna work your schedule around Fox's schedule. And Fox was like, we're not negotiating with True TV. We're Fox. And I was like, so I lost the Fox deal. So here I am on set now, upset. I'm like, you got to be shitting me, because the money on the Fox deal, because I would have been executive producer and the lead, it was the whole season of that True TV wouldn't even amount to two episodes of the Fox deal.
So that's
that would put me in a bad mood.
I get it. So take it out on Godfrey. I get it.
Yeah. No, it was more like... I was more upset with the higher-ups, the people that weren't even on set. But every day I was just like, I can't believe it. Because, you know, I'm looking at Bob Saget, who was Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos. And now you look at many people have multiple shows.
Right, right. Well, now it's far more common. Yeah, and of course. Now it's more common.
You got to be kidding me.
And you must have some good Shaq anecdotes from your time doing that. And specifically the thing that I've always wanted to know is how much that man consumes during a 24-hour period.
Before you answer that question, this is important. I'm sorry. One more little anecdote. Me and Shaq, I swear to God, wiener cousins. Continue.
What the hell? Yeah, like, I'm both impressed and concerned about the amount of STDs you have.
pretty wild, though. That's a pretty wild one. Anyway.
That unbelievable. Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
Well, but like, well, now I want to hear who Shaq was fucking. Yeah. That might have been also someone Ralph fucked on the set. But he's 7'1", and he's a big boy. And I always thought to be that tall and that kind of fat, that's a full-time job. You got to eat constantly to be that weight. Like, is he just constantly shoveling food in his face? That is a full-time job to be fat and that tall.
He's not, I wouldn't call him fat. He's just thick, naturally thick. Yeah. You know, very much like a Jordan Sparks, if you're looking at music. You know what I mean? Just naturally thick. I never saw him eating crazy. He had his chef that was making all his meals because we filmed half the season at his house.
I mean, at this point, say no more. He has a chef that's making his meals. That kind of answers the question, I feel.
But you would assume it'd be one of them chefs that's like also like almost like a sober guide, but in this case, like trying to help him eat healthy.
No, I don't see him hiring a dude like that. But the weird thing is this. Yeah. So if it was 10 years ago, and I don't mean to harp on this, just Gottfried's a good dude. He's on the network. I know you guys are friends now, but why did it last 10 years? And when you tried to get him on your show, was there pushback?
I never tried. And it's not, you know, you're so busy as it is. You're living your own life. It's not like my every day I was consumed with right. thinking of Godfrey. It was just like,
that would have been
if
weird.
If anyone would come up, I'd be like, yeah, I don't think that guy likes me. And I think, and I was just in my own head and I was thinking, yeah, I don't think he likes me that much. And then people are like, why? I go, I don't know. I can't really say. And I've never said a bad word about him. He didn't do anything. And I was just like, I don't know what it was. I think the way the show ended. And then I end up getting fired from the show by my own accord. Like, they didn't fire me. They let me go. They brought in a new girl to be the co-host. And I was so like, really? A year later, you're going to let me go? You wouldn't let me out last year, but you're letting me out this year?
Fucked up. That's, how long did that show last?
2 seasons.
Oh, okay. Well, you missed out on 1 season, I guess.
Then. I wish I would have missed out on both. I'd have the Fox.
All right, before we go any further, I want to talk about one of our longtime sponsors. We're talking about Yo Delta. Yo Delta is the home of Delta 8. They are the way to get high all year long. They have gummies, they have vapes, and they can legally be shipped in a majority of the states in this grand country of ours if you're over the age of 21. What is Delta 8? It is found in weed and can be shipped nationwide legally for the most part and gets you really fucking high. Yo Delta is potent, and if you're living in a state where it's legal, you can come back and get your vapes, your gummies, direct from Yo Delta's website, yodelta.com, and use the promo code GAS. You're going to get 25% off. That's 25% off for the promo code GAS at yodelta.com. Stock up on your Delta 8 now before it gets cold, and you could stay home all winter long and know that you're going to get fucking high. All right, let's get back into it. So now this delves into the topic that in my doing the research on Gary Owen is what came up over and over again. So you can't do that podcast anymore, apparently, because of your pending divorce is what you said. Is that still true?
The Get Some?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't it. I took a hiatus because of the divorce. I couldn't be in California because I was a point of process server
right.
for a while. We honestly, the podcast ended amicably with the people that were running at Malka. It was just, for whatever reason, the numbers wasn't lining up like we thought when I came back.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't at nobody's fault. And honestly, it just ended amicably. I was like, all right, I'm gonna
revamp it. Oh, so you're done. You're done with it right now.
Well, temporarily. I'm just shopping it elsewhere. And it's just more like, those guys were great, but I don't live in LA. For me to fly to LA and do these episodes, it's got to be worth it.
Well,
and,
you know, there's this thing now called Zoom that you might be aware of because we're currently doing it, and you don't need to
very go much
to LA every single time to do the podcast. SDR, we do 2 a week. One is live in studio, and one is through Zoom because you get people that you wouldn't normally get if you open up that floodgate of Zoom. You know, just a little bit of advice right there. So anyway, that you touched on, which I learned something crazy just by researching Gary Owen. Apparently, where you file for divorce is where the laws apply to that divorce. I never fucking knew that. Is that correct? Like, because you have to have a residence in that state. Like, how does that work legally? Because it was fascinating to me to hear your story of hiding out for months and your wife trying to serve you in California, you trying to serve her in Ohio. Is that because that's where your two residents are, or does that mean any state you can do it?
No, it's wherever you, it's a little more complicated than that. Like we owned a house in Ohio and we owned a house in California. Now we were state residents of Ohio. We paid taxes in Ohio. We voted in Ohio. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of our time in Ohio. So basically it came down to who's going to get served first as to where the divorce would head down. And that's something you have to fight. You have to, they said like, if she would have got me first, then I would have had to fight to get it back in Ohio.
Right.
And so I got her served first. So we did get it in Ohio, but it was more like it's a big cat and mouse game, but you have to actually have a residence in the state. You can't.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay. I thought, yeah. Okay. That's, it makes a lot more sense. So, but because you had two homes, one was maybe a vacation home or a secondary home, whatever, but you have two residences, California and Ohio. And depending on where you get served, this could, or did the serving, California has very favorable laws to the spouse.
50, I think 50. It's
50-50, but
for 50, life, 50, I think.
For life, which is crazy.
Yes.
That's
insane.
Crazy. That's pretty wild. And now I know that you eventually served her at a Panera Bread. Did you think about getting Panera as a sponsor for your tour or something?
No.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It's funny because, like any divorce, you go through the range of emotions where can't stand each other. How dare you? I did this for you. You did, you know.
Right.
I think both spouses would be like, I did this for you. And then she's going, why did this for you? And it's a little tit for tat. And then finally, we didn't even end up going to trial. I mean, we're not done yet, but we went to mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just told the lawyers, can you leave the room? And then me and her finally talked. And we finally was like, this is just numbers. It's just math at this point. Let's take the emotions out of it. What do you need? What's fair? Okay, let's just get this over with. So once we got the lawyers out of there for a little bit and got to talk one-on-one, we were able to be amicable. And then even now when we're...
That's interesting.
They'll send something like paperwork for us to sign and she'll see something or I'll see something and then we'll just call each other like, this ain't cool or this ain't cool.
Right.
And it's not like it's smooth talking every time. Sometimes we'll get heated.
Of course.
But it is amazing if you could just get on the phone with the other person and do the math.
Well, Gary, I was listening to a couple of your anecdotes this weekend. And you can see the seeds of what will eventually be your next stand-up special with regards to the process server avoidance was happening throughout California.
By the way, can you please call the next special served in Ohio? Go ahead.
Well, here's my thing. I think it's more than stand-up. Dude, first of all, it's a comedy, maybe, but it's a dark comedy. But it is so gripping. Your stories, your cloak and dagger ways that you would avoid that process server. It's a movie, dude.
Yeah.
It is a script. And you can use those skills that you learned in avoiding the process server with your Navy background and become a CIA agent by the end of it or something.
That's
but and I'm going to pitch you my title. Ready? To Serve and Regret. The Gary Owens story. Or you can make it fictionalized. But it was unbelievable. I was on the edge of my seat and I was telling my co-host this morning that, and she's engaged. I'm like, if you ever were on the fence about getting married, listen to some of the shit that Gary has been going through with regards to his divorce, because I've never heard of anything like it.
Yeah, I love that you drove to Pittsburgh. You drove to Pittsburgh to avoid going to, where is it? I don't know what other state.
Baltimore.
Baltimore, just to avoid, like, it did seem like some real secret agent man shit that you were pulling off.
Yeah, seriously.
And the weird thing is, like, and what's funny, you said, we got pitch me set up at different studios for the process server film.
Oh,
me and
that's
my
great.
Manager is already on it. But
amazing.
You always wonder, how does this end? Because that's all I kept thinking of when I'm hiding out these hotels and I'm flying into cities and like literally like my head's on a swivel the whole time. Like somebody yells Gary Owen, I run away. Like full on sprint. Cause I don't know what Miami. I remember one time I was in Miami I found out later it was like an escort hotel. It's the Aloft by the Miami airport.
Found out later, putting that in quotes.
Oh, I love the Aloft. Oh. I mean, wait, so the Aloft. Yeah, never heard. Okay, continue. Yeah.
No, I'm watching it all go down. I'm like, wait a minute.
I get it. Go down. Continue.
Why is the dude in a wife beater and basketball shorts on the phone all day and night in the lobby? And then the girl, like, I almost knew too much. I knew room 213 was where it was going down. Like,
oh man,
I was just, because I'd only come down for Uber Eats or DoorDash, and then I'd literally had the front desk dude looking out for me, like they down here, and then he would grab my food, and then I'd get it from him.
Right, you'd have to do that because maybe the DoorDash guy was working for the process server, right?
Right, boom.
So he's coming with his sign. Am I right to guess you didn't sign an autograph for like 3 years while this is going on? That has to be true, right?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when Baltimore, it was like my two worlds. I'm going, God dang, I can't go out. It sucks, but I'm at the Four Seasons hiding out. I go, okay, life ain't that bad. Right. Let's just put everything in perspective. You know what I mean?
Well, it almost feels disrespectful for someone who was in the Navy to associate what you went through with PTSD. But I'm sure you probably do have a little bit of that now. Even now that you're almost at the end of this nightmare, I'm assuming that you still kind of like shirk a little bit if someone that you don't know is up patting you on the back and wants you to sign this or that. Or like, I would assume that that still freaks you out because it was happening for so long.
I know. Yeah. The one guy that chased me around the seafood restaurant was amazing. I was like, dude, he kept telling the dude I was with, like, yo, I'm just a fan. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck who you are, bro. Don't come near me.
I learned so much from you, particularly when it comes to divorce laws in California. But I also learned, and this is one of your body men, I guess, or, you know, bodyguards or what, or assistants. If the server doesn't get you, but gets him, it's still you've been served because he's one of your guys. And that's such an arbitrary, weird law to begin with. But that almost happened. Like, he almost touched it, right?
Oh, yeah. I literally fired my old road manager and a guy opening for me because they had one job. Don't let nobody get near me. And we went to Colorado Springs, and that process server, all he did, we're crossing the street. We got there an hour before the show. And we're going down an alley, and the guy goes, "Hey, Gary!" And I turned, and I saw the papers.
And you matrix—that's when you matrix bullet timed it, right? You matrix bullet timed it.
But the worst part, he walked right between my road manager and my opener.
Oh, that's fucked up.
You got one job, and then my opener, he threw the papers at me, but he didn't hit me. So I'm still running. He winged them at me, and they're just sitting in this alley, and I see my opener look down, and I go, "Don't fucking touch that."
That's crazy.
Well, let me ask you this. I hate the word triggered, but I can't think of any other way to describe it. Were you triggered when you saw that footage of Olivia Wilde getting served while
on stage?
Show
that was fucked
on stage
up.
By Jason Sudeikis.
I know, right? And then you hear stories of like athletes get served coming out of the tunnel, like NBA players, like the prosecutor lean down and handle the papers.
That's fucked up, man.
Oh my God.
I mean, you just
and you like, and they're like you. They're like you were, and you've said it a million times before, where it's real hard to hide when your schedule is on fucking line. I mean, the NBA players, the schedule's right there.
Yeah, it'd be cool, by the way, if your website said, your schedule says, "You'll see me where you see me." It's like just no dates listed. And by the way, this was a weird line of yours, and I'm sorry to get a little personal here. You said in an interview, "I have been served before for other things." So plural, you've been served before. What were you served on? Or can you not tell us?
No, one is a funny story. You remember Ocho Cinco, Chad Johnson?
Of course. Oh, the Bengals guy. Yeah.
So when I used to live in Cincinnati, all the time when I was in Cincinnati, back in 2006, we had a comedy night together at the Funny Bone. It was Chad Johnson's Too Funny Tuesday, hosted by Gary Owen. And every week, we'd sell out. It looked like a Bengals game. Like, it was all these people that wouldn't normally go to comedy clubs. They're wearing Bengal gear. And Chad would always give away two tickets every show. So one week, he wanted to give away Lexus to his girlfriend. Wow. He wanted to surprise her. But he was asking, because how do I do it? And he goes, "You know what? When you choose the numbers out of the raffles, we'll say I'm going to raffle the car off, but I'm just going to raffle. I'm going to give it to her, but I want to make sure she shows up." So blah, blah, blah. So anyway, long story short, he tells the whole crowd, "Hey, you guys have been supporting me and I've been supporting you this whole time. And this girl's important to me. I couldn't figure out another way to surprise her. So I'm going to surprise her with this Lexus." Mm-hmm. So most people didn't care, but it takes one guy.
Sure.
To say, "Hey, I bought tickets because I thought I could win a Lexus." That's false advertising. So I got served because they went to court over this Lexus.
Wow.
At the Funny Bone. And the guy served me at the comedy club. And what happened was, and what happened was such bullshit afterwards. The judge said, look, there was 325 seats. The car was $55,000. We're going to divide that into 325 and whatever amount that came out to, whatever, a couple thousand dollars. You have to show your receipt and proof that you were there that night. So I end up asking Chad, what'd you end up out of? He goes, eight people got some money out of me. Okay. Eight total. Yeah.
It's not so bad, I guess. Could be no, worse.
Yeah.
Oh, at a 325, I go, that was just BS. But I got served off that. The guy served because I had to testify.
That's fair enough.
It is so interesting how it's different state by state. I got served one time, but in New York, all they got to do, if they can get into your apartment building, all they got to do is tape it to your door, and you are served. Like, I didn't have to be there, and I was served, because the guy figured out how to get in and just got up to my apartment and taped it on my door, and that was it.
Hmm. That's wild. I didn't know. I mean, it's just, there's so many weird fucking laws in this country. You find out the hard way.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So this is also interesting. What I love when Bill comes on is Bill actually does research also, which usually I'm the only one. But
it's to overcompensate for a lack of talent.
Oh, same here. So yeah. I watched an interview with you and T-Pain, right? And you played the voicemail of your dad, who, let's just cut to the chase, it was kind of shitty during this divorce. You saved the voicemail, and it just, I mean, if you haven't seen the story, he just kind of was a douchebag, your father, to you. I don't need to rake the coals. But the part that fascinated me was T-Pain said he was going to make a song out of it, and this is like 5 months ago. Did he make the song, or did he pull a Charlie Sheen? And not
he made the song.
Oh, he did?
He made the song. I was going to play it on my last special, Black Famous, but Showtime said the fact that we're using his voice and his words, he could say he helped co-write my special and sue me. So I couldn't play it. So I have it. I always say this on stage now. I have the song. I have to wait till my divorce is final.
Okay.
So I can figure out what I'm really going to do with it. Do I want to risk playing it and getting sued or taken to court? I just can't handle two court cases at the same time.
Fair enough.
So but I'm trying to figure out.
If you put it out like on Spotify, then I guess there's a chance you might have to share any royalties with him. Is that what you're saying? That's what might happen?
I'm fine with that. As long as I can tell the story.
Yeah.
As long as I can bury that bitch.
You know? It's still such a great act of revenge because, I mean, essentially, like I would say the Cliff Notes version is your dad decided to take the side of his daughter-in-law rather than his own blood son in the middle of this maelstrom. And, you know, we always say bros before hoes, but they got to come up with something with regards to dads, like sons before huns or sonnies before honeys, because your dad basically threw you under the roof for the woman that you're divorcing online.
Oh, and it's so much worse now that we're actually talking. Me and her.
Really?
It's so much worse. The information, the betrayal, and the lies. Fuck. He's just straight up telling lies. Like we went into mediation. And one of the first things she asked me is like, hey, what happened to the $292,000 you won in Reno on the slot machine? I go, what are you talking about? When our divorce first hit the fan, my neighbors in California, my old neighbors who moved to Reno, his wife gambles a lot. So she ended up winning this money and he sent me a picture of the slot machine. Okay. I sent it to my dad as a joke and said, yo, I just hit, don't tell my wife, she'll get half, LOL. I called him and said, dude, I'm kidding. I didn't win that. He screenshot that, sent it to my ex, knowing it's bullshit, and acted like I want his money. He just making life harder.
And you also
your
said,
dad
by
is
the way,
a narc.
Your dad's also not like a, like he was at the rallies for Trump and like he's not
yes.
a very pro black kind of guy. He's a, almost, I would say, is it fair to say definitely maybe racist? Is that wrong to say? I don't want to put a name on it, but
he's very has no black friends. I call him like a functional bigot. Like he's not I hate black people, but he don't want to hang out with none.
Was he against your marriage originally because she was black?
No, because no, he's like I said, not that.
Okay.
But like I said, to not have any black friends and not have a black person ever over your house outside of my ex and my kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you're right. not going over anybody else's house that's black either. your yeah. whole life. You know right. what I mean?
Now, again, I feel like I don't want to spend the whole time on the divorce. I just found it so fascinating because I guess you're probably
it's horrifying.
A couple of months away from being able to fully talk about it. But what I feel about it is that in listening to your story, it is a life lesson for every, whether you're famous and wealthy or not, it yes. is a lesson to at least, yes. at the very least, get a fucking prenup. Even if you don't have money, get a prenup before you start. You never know. Just get the fucking prenup. Is that a fair lesson to take from all this?
It's yeah, it's completely fair. Just because I'm not like a dick. Like I would never leave my ex high and dry because we did go through a lot together. Mm-hmm. It's just when you, it's classic, get the lawyers involved. She got her lawyers. I don't know where her head's at and she don't know right. where mine's at. So everything gets muddled. Her friends are telling her this, don't trust him, he ain't this. And my friends are telling me one thing. And then I would never just have left her hanging. And the right. money we've spent on lawyers, her and me, could have went to her.
Right, right. That's you the know? Craziest thing. As someone who's been in a couple of lawsuits in my life, if you just would, like you said earlier, you got with your wife and you just sat and talked with lawyers out of the room, 99% of the time you can resolve it and not spend a fucking dime. And that would be far more beneficial for both parties. But on, I watched Black Famous, enjoyed it very much. But one thing that right. you implied is that you've never said a bad word about your wife anywhere that I've seen. You've taken the high road and you've said many yeah. times you take a lot of L's because your divorce played out online. And as you say, your father fucking shit on you and other people called you the dusty white devil, I believe is the right term. But
yeah,
you implied several times, oh, when it comes out, you're gonna see, like, you're, even though you never said anything,
oh,
negative,
I can't wait.
It feels wait. Like there is something there, you just can't oh, talk yeah. about it. Is that right? Because you've said that many times, like, oh, when I can't talk about it, wait till you see.
Yeah, and it's what it's
because it is,
it's
but
not
that's
just
like
me
that's
being
like
innocent.
Saying something, that's like saying something without saying something, you know what I mean? Like, it's like saying something happened. But I'm going to take a high road right now.
But it's not just her. Like, I'm talking about my part in the divorce, too.
Right.
I can't own everything that I've done. So, the good thing about comedians is people want to know that we're quote unquote messed up and we're not right. perfect. And we can talk about our issues, too. Of so course. When I say that, as I, you know, when I really could say what was wrong with our divorce and everything, it's just like I can really talk about my part in it and quote unquote right. hers also.
The thing that I feel, and I look, I'm 52, never married, right? Not even close in my life. No kids, blah, blah, blah. But I've seen this happen and you said it in a couple interviews and it upsets me because I know this is what happened with my parents too, is they stay together for the sake of the kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're fucking helping nobody. You're teaching the kids this is a dysfunctional is the way relationships should be. And I think sometimes it's better to just bail because you're not teaching positive lessons to the kids. Does that make sense? Am I being a dick by saying that?
No, but I think everybody's different. Like, I really think especially as comedians, I'm able to compartmentalize things and I'm gone so much.
Right.
So this would have never lasted as long as if I was a plumber. And it was 9 to 5 and I was coming home every day. Right. I was able to leave and escape yeah. and then come back and then realize, I'm leaving again in 3 days. Come back. But my kids never, I've never said a curse word or called her out her name. There's no physical or mental abuse on either side mm-hmm. in front of the kids. So not to say they had a Disney childhood. They didn't, but they never saw any abuse or saw us arguing like that.
I just remember parents arguing like crazy when I was a kid. They were separated for like 8 years until they finally got divorced. But I would just hear them screaming at each other all the time. It's like, this is crazy. Maybe it's why I'm still single. What were you going to say, Bill? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, like, I'm like Ralph in a lot of ways, aside from the fact that I'm not Eskimo twins with Shaq. But I'm like him in the sense that I've never had been married and never had kids. But, you know, I've gotten close a couple times. And I'll tell you what, the best way to teach is with humor. And that's why I can't wait for your next comedy special where you really talk about everything, because you have educated me so much this past weekend, listening to just some of the stuff that you've gone through, where I've never felt happier about my decisions in my entire life.
I imagine the next special is written already with all this. I'm sure you're halfway through it, if not more, right? It's
got
to be.
Well, it's funny. You got to be so careful because everybody's got their phones now. And so I got this bank data. And I'm going, I just need this to be final. And I just I need this final. And I literally told my manager and everything, I said, give me 2 months in the clubs, like 8 weeks straight where I can work this out. Like, I got a new hour already, but it's not the hour I want.
Right. That's crazy.
I want to be able to.
And it's funny because the interviews I saw with you were like back in August, and I thought, oh, maybe by now he can talk about it. But evidently, it's still going on. It's crazy how fucking
we're
long.
We're close.
Last question.
That's another education for how long it takes. Like, good Lord.
Last question on it, then we'll move on, is that you've said many times that at least one of your kids didn't want to talk to you anymore. Has that resolved itself or not?
No, they're still not speaking to me right now. No, none of them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I told my ex, I go, look, we worked this out and I'm quote unquote doing right by you. I said, just, we got to tell them the whole story. Cause right now I'm just the dad that left everybody high and dry, which is not the case.
Oh, by the way, great name for the special.
High and dry.
That's so fucked up. And you on the front like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I just told her, I said, you know, I can own my part. You got to own your part too in this.
Right. Of course. So yeah.
It's not just, like I said, nobody gets divorced. And it was just, especially a couple like us. It wasn't like I did all the wrong and nothing right. You know, there's culpability on both sides.
Right. I mean, rarely, I guess that's not true. Cause you would think, so they say men cheat when they think they can get away with it and women cheat when there's something wrong in the marriage. But I don't think that's true anymore. I think that's an antiquated look at it. I don't know. But now
it was when they had less power and they've got a lot more power now. And so the dynamic certainly changes.
That's
true.
The weird thing for me is on your top five comedians of all time, you put Pablo Francisco. I find that strange.
Yeah.
Was he a friend or just you want to give him a shout out or what?
No, it's when I first got to L.A., I think I never seen anybody like just destroy a white room, a Latino room, and a black room like Pablo. And keep in mind, I never saw Pablo do over 15, 20 minutes because, you know, LA, you're getting spots.
Right.
But just to see him on the lineup and be like, man, that guy, the timing of the way he impersonated.
He did a lot of voices, right? Impressions and voices, right? That was the big trick. Yeah, I remember
I'm just talking about. I would see him do the same bit and I would wait. Like if I went up, I would sit and wait and be like, okay, Pablo's gone about 20 minutes. I want to wait. He just made me laugh.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. I remember him. I remember him from back in the day. I don't know. Is he still out there? Is he still doing comedy?
I don't know. I haven't seen or heard in a while, but man, this where I was at in my early 20s, moving to LA and seeing him just destroy rooms like that. Like, you know, it's just where I was in my life. It was just, at that time, I was like, you're talking about all time for me and my experiences in stand-up, which is different than everybody else. I go, he'll always be one of my favorites.
Fair enough.
At that time of my life.
One of the go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, just real quick, as far as comedians are concerned, I mean, we're all about roughly the same age. I'm assuming Eddie Murphy was as big a deal for you as I'm sure it was for Ralph and myself growing up. How accessible was he not, I'm assuming, on the set of Daddy Daycare. Did you get to hang out with him at all? Was he surrounded by an army of guys that wouldn't let him be served? What was your situation with him there? Were you able to hang out with him at all, or was he aloof?
It was my third movie, and the first one I did was Held Up with Jamie Foxx, but Jamie wasn't Oscar-winning Jamie. He was really, and it was such a small cast, and we were on location in the middle of nowhere. We all were kind of together. It was the first movie that I worked with a quote-unquote superstar, where we had base camp, and then we had Camp Eddie.
Wow.
Okay.
I saw the fence get put up in the mats that you used to wrestle in high school, got taped up around the fence so you couldn't see in them.
Wow.
His trailer was bigger than everybody else's. I saw the basketball hoop get raised up inside of Camp Eddie, and you're just in a parking lot. And we had a decent cast. We had Steve Zahn, Jeff Garland, Angela, what's her name? Anyways, it was just the first, but the first day that he was on set, he didn't do the table read, didn't do the rehearsal, but he's Eddie Murphy. He doesn't have to. He came out. First time I saw him was when we were doing the dry run to film. I'm in his broccoli outfit, or the carrot outfit. I was in the carrot outfit first. And he came out, he just came up and he goes, "Oh, what's up, man?" And like dapped me up and quoted one of my jokes.
Oh,
and
wow. Went,
no, oh, my God.
The guy, but I heard that about Eddie. I heard he watches a lot of stand up and he knows who's who in the scene. And when he knew one of my jokes, I was like, no way, dude. There's
That's
no way.
Fucking cool as shit.
That's insane.
What about on Get Hard? Because there's some scenes in that movie. One of my favorite scenes is Will Ferrell trying to talk hard and getting all dark. I just fucking love that scene. But how was filming on that set? Was that fun?
I was never on that movie, bro.
No, you're listening.
No, they gave me the credit. I was in negotiations. I was so close to the point where I signed my deal, and at the last second, they go, "Yeah, we're going a different route."
Ah, shit.
But I stayed on all the credits.
Yeah, it's on all your credits. Yeah, it's crazy.
But yeah, I was going to say, it was kind of, aside from the lack of the money coming from it, that's it's a good one to have on your credits.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, I was never on that movie, but we got to the point where they called, "Is Gary Owen available?" They're like, "Yeah, like, we're working all out." It was, well, I was waiting for my travel plans to New Orleans, and all of a sudden, just went away, but it was still on all my credits.
Yeah, it's still listed. Like, when you play yourself. Announced. You play yourself in there.
That's yeah. Great. When it got announced in like Variety, I was on the cast. I go, what? I wasn't in that movie.
You know, so to change gears, you and I had a very similar experience. We both got COVID very early, right? And I got it. You talk about this in the special. I got it before people knew it was in New York. And I only knew that I never tested positive for it. But I'm pretty sure I had it. The reason being, I started eating food out of my fridge and none of it tasted like anything. This is before it was listed as a symptom. And I thought the food in my fridge had spoiled. So I just threw out everything in my fridge. And it wasn't until weeks later, I was sick or whatever. I thought maybe because I'm so sick. And then I found that effort. Oh, no, that's a symptom of COVID. You had a similar experience with that.
Yeah. God, that was so long ago. When I caught it, it was funny because I always say that the three symptoms were so far apart. It was no taste, no smell, death. I go, geez, that's a hell of a window, guys.
Yeah, after the no taste and no smell, you're like, I can't move. I'm afraid thing's going to happen.
Yeah, but I remember just the first time I was eating, I was just like, wait a minute. Oh, shit, I might have it. You know, because I had all this. I was sick and nothing. I just felt off. Here's the funny part they didn't say on my special. So I get it. I test positive, right? And then I was negative. So then I'm getting ready to go back on the road. I'll never forget. I was either at the Columbus or Cleveland Improv. And my road manager, the same one that didn't help me stop the process server, he got it, clearly got it from me. Then he goes, he gets on Facebook and Instagram going, "Yeah, I caught COVID. I could use everybody's prayers and everything else." And I go, so now the club's calling because they know my roommate for years. They're like, "Yo, is Gary okay?" And I'm going, I call him. I go, "Dude, why would you post that? Why would you post that?" He goes, "Wait a minute." I go, "They're about to cancel me this weekend, man. Don't cost me work. I'm negative." And he's like, "Man, I just wanted to get people's prayers." I said, "No, you didn't. You wanted sympathy. You wanted likes. Stop."
Yeah, the prayer warrior, so to speak, as you say in the special, is fucking ridiculous. It is. And I forget who does that. It's people in this day and age, they just want to be recognized. That's all it is. Sure. They want something. It's so crazy. Now I'm worried about my research, but we'll see. There's a movie coming out, which sounds insane. Back on the Strip, you, Kevin Hart, Wesley Snipes, Tiffany Haddish, J.B. Smoove. I mean, Jesus Christ. Tell me about this, please.
Old guy strippers.
Yeah, it's we're getting the band back together. Like 25 years ago, the Chippendales ran the Vegas Strip. We were the chocolate chips. We was off the Strip, and we were I was the only white chocolate chip. I was a white chocolate chip. And nobody knew I was white back in the day because my stripper name is Dr. X. I was in medical school, so I would show up to the strip club in my scrubs, and I never took them off, and I spray tanned myself. And then that's how they never do. So when they find me 25 years later, they're like, dude, Dr. X is white. That's and then funny. I'm so excited. We're back. Here's a funny story about that movie.
That's hilarious.
So my first day where I had to get makeup, where they had to spray tan my body black. It was so dark and the contrast was ridiculous. And I'm literally going to the makeup lady. I'm going, I don't think I should be this dark.
Oh, man.
This doesn't look right.
And then of course.
She's going, no, this is what they want. This is what they want. I said, I don't know about this, man. I mean, it was Wesley Snipes walked in the makeup trailer and went, that's too dark. And I said, okay, if Wesley Snipes says I'm too dark, I'm too dark.
That's fucking
they had
great.
To tone it down.
How easy
hey,
is
at
it?
Least he didn't throw you down the road. Like, I mean, you were basically Ted Danson with Whoopi Goldberg.
Right, that's what I was thinking of.
That's wild. It'd be funny if that's what gets you canceled in the end of it all because you were too dark in the movie. That'd be crazy. Well,
my face isn't black though. Okay. And I think the big thing is blackface.
Right. All right. Your face.
I have a full mask on. So it was like, if I took my mask off, I think it was just my body.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny. And also you're filming some movie called Dottie and Soul. Am I right about that too?
That's done. We finished that. That movie took 2 years because of COVID.
Oh boy.
We filmed for 2 weeks. COVID hit. We had to stop in Oklahoma City. We came back like 8 months later, filmed more. The lead actress in it is in her 70s or 80s.
Yeah, Leslie Uggams.
Uggams. And so we really had to wait till it was completely done.
We're like, hey, guys, let's wait, but let's not wait too long. She's in her 80s.
Yeah. We were thinking that too. So when finally COVID, we completely got a handle and there were all three vaccinations out there and everything. Then we finally finished it in New York of all places. We started in Oklahoma City, finished it in New York. And it's being filmed at some film festivals now. I saw the final cut. It came out better than I thought. You're never sure with the lower budget independent movie.
And also with stopping and starting, it's gotta be weird. So it's cool and David Koechner is in that too, right? David Koechner, however you
he's
say it's
great.
Fun. Love him. He's so fucking fun. Koechner, whatever the fuck it is. I just like to say cock in there somehow. That's why
it's kind of like COVID coming out right before they're filming the final scene with old Rose in Titanic. And then they're just fucking white knuckling it, hoping she doesn't die because then her heart won't go on.
Yeah, for real.
All right, listen, we are almost out of time. Jesus Christ. So we got to do the first with him now.
The first time.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time. Your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just meet the first concert you ever went to. It doesn't have to be rock, just the first concert you ever went to, ideally on your own volition, not one that your deadbeat dad took you to, one that you wanted to go to on your own.
Well, it was my deadbeat dad that took me to the first concert, and it was Hiroshima. It was some jazz group that didn't sing. It was like some concert in the park, and he wanted to go. And I hate your
father even more. How about that?
10-year-old kid sitting here on the lawn.
Concert in the park tells me. Concert in the park tells me it was free.
It was free. These Asian people, I was like, what is going on here? They're not singing, and they're just playing these instruments. And I'm going, this is terrible. And I just sit in the park watching this, waiting for somebody to sing. It was awful.
Calling it Hiroshima also is kind of funny. But what about the first you went to on your own volition?
It was a summer jam I was in D.C., so it was Keith Sweat.
Cool.
Jagged
Edge?
Not Jagged Edge wasn't out yet. So it was Keith Sweat, H-Town. It was like five groups. It was Jade, SWV, Jade, H-Town, not Guy. It was had this short guy. Oh, Shy and Silk.
Oh wow, I liked those. Silk had Comforter, right? That was their song. That was their big jam. That was a good song.
These are all groups that Chocolate Chips could strip to.
Yeah,
without question. I think we might have.
When does that come out, by the way? When does that Back on the Strip come out?
I don't know. I talked to the director, Chris Spencer. He said, it's funny, Martin Luther King weekend in January, but we'll see. That's all when he said they were looking at it. And they said theaters. So.
Now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug, but most people weed was. So if it wasn't that.
Weed's the only drug I ever did.
Ever. All right. How old were you?
I'm 49.
No, when you did it the first time.
Weed? It sounds awful. Six?
6 years old?
Oh, my God.
This was my stepdad. His friends would come over and they were hitting bongs and I hit it.
Oh my God.
That's fucking hilarious. Did you know, like he knew, he allowed it? Would it do it on your, like no one was looking or like they
His buddy gave it to me.
Oh, that's fucking wild.
Oh man.
And they're sitting in their little apartment and I kept singing the Popcorn Man afterwards. I was going, I'm the Popcorn Man. Didn't make any sense. I don't know what I was talking about. I kept just saying, I'm the popcorn man. I'm the popcorn man.
Was your father, was your stepdad pissed or he didn't care?
I don't think he ever knew. Oh, if he did.
I don't feel bad about getting my 8-year-old brother drunk at all. This is 10 times worse. Ralph, is that your youngest for weed?
That is our youngest for weed for sure.
You just won, Gary. You are the youngest.
Thanks.
When I was like 7 or 8, I was having dinner with my dad and I used to love virgin pina coladas. I loved how they tasted. So we went to Beefsteak Charlie's, which doesn't exist anymore, but I ordered a pina colada and I had one or two of them. And I said, Dad, this tastes weird. And he smells it and it had alcohol in it. And I remember my father screaming at the waiter, you gave my fucking 8-year-old kid alcohol. What the fuck is wrong with you? I'll never forget that. All right. Now, the first time you had sex.
19 years old. 19.
Six.
I was in the Navy and it's actually a funny story. The girl really wanted to sleep with me. My roommate in the barracks, his girlfriend was always bringing this girl over, and it was clear she was liking me. So finally, they kind of set me up. We're drinking in the barracks. They leave. It's just me and her. And I just remember I came so fast. Like, I literally goes, my face was making the face. And she goes, are you coming? And I said, yeah. She goes, already? I said, get out. So here's what's funny.
I kicked her
out of my barracks room. Gets better. I kicked her out of my barracks room and she's knocking on the door going, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You got to realize I'm in the Presidential Honor Guard. So the barracks we lived in was notorious. Like girls would come through and it's like raw meat and lions. You got all these guys between 18 and 22 years old. All of them over 6 foot, all of them with no more than 34 inch waist. We're all in shape. And you got girls coming through there. So this girl's in the hallway trying to get back in my room. Another Presidential Honor Guard guy swooped her up. She ended up banging him the same night. And they started dating.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. Well, at least you weren't the sloppy seconds as quick as you were.
Did he thank you? He said, Gary, I want to thank you, Gary, for coming so quickly because now I got a girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
Well, and Gary, I know we got to let you go, but just real quick, I don't know how the statute of limitations works for stuff like this, but do you have any good Clinton anecdotes while you were on the Presidential Honor Guard? Anything come to mind as far as don't ask, don't tell about people that Clinton was meeting?
No, I don't. You know, we had, it was funny because I did his inauguration in 93, January 93.
Wow.
Wow.
So we marched in the inauguration parade. And I used to do a joke about it, but we marched behind a Florida A&M band. And so they're twerking, tootsie rolling, these damn Florida A&M girls on the dance squad and everything. And I just remember we walked by, you do an eyes left and you look at the president and Clinton was still kind of glancing. down to Florida. And then, I said, he didn't see us. He didn't pay no attention to us.
That's great.
You can take the bill out of Hope, Arkansas, but well, you can't.
Right?
The movie Back on the Strip, release date to be determined. You could follow Gary Owen at Gary Owen Comedy or go to GaryOwen.live for dates and everything else like that. His most recent comedy special, Black Famous, is available now on Showtime. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room and do our plugs?
No, I think Black Famous is now on Hulu, Prime Video. It's pretty much everywhere but Netflix right now.
I watched it on Showtime, I believe. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, that's where it came out, but now it's everywhere. We leased it out.
Oh, that's
released
good out. Bill, your plugs?
Oh, just at Bill Schultz on Twitter, S-H-U-L-Z. Don't do Andrew Schultz. He's got enough followers.
Jesus. Yeah, that is crazy how big your fucking cousin got, man. It's nuts.
Honestly, I'm nervous to text him now because I'm assuming he's just going to think I'm asking for
I have a great story, but it's really quickly. I'm going to shit on your cousin for a second.
Please do.
So I had an idea because I am not a comic, as is well established. And I just wanted to do a round of going on some bigger podcasts just for the shits and giggles, right? If we go back 5 years ago, Andrew used to text me and call me a lot asking me about how to set up a multi-camera shoot for a podcast. And I would always give him answers on how to do shit. He was just getting started, but I, you know, come from that background. So whatever, helped him out. So I texted him. I hadn't talked to him in a while. Hey, dude, is this still you? He texts back immediately. Yeah, it's me. What's up? I said, I'm looking to get on a couple of podcasts. Can I come on one of your shows? Never heard from him again. Never even responded. That motherfucker.
The only time he references me is that on he was on Megyn Kelly's podcast. He's like, my only I've already achieved my goal, which is to be way more successful than Bill. I'm like, cool, awesome.
But I mean, people ask me all the time to come on SDR. I say, you know, I don't know if it's right for the show, but I appreciate the ask or whatever. You know, have some fucking balls and tell me no, you're not right for the fucking show. That's all I'm gonna say. That's it. All right.
I can go weeks without getting a text back. Yeah, fucking
Tim Dillon just recorded with Louis C.K. in my studios, right? And I texted Tim to do it. He goes, like, look, next time I'm in New York, we'll work it out. You know, but anyway, finish your plugs. I'm sorry, Bill.
Oh, and then, yes, just really quick. Gary, man, we love to get you on. And even though I am awful, my co-host is very fun to look at. Me, morning with Bill Schultz and Joanne Nosachinski on CompoundMedia.com. Subscription-based, but it's so cheap you can't afford not to do it. And if you DM me, I'll give you a really good deal on the old Twitter sphere. Thanks again, Ralph. And Gary, it was a pleasure meeting you, man. You're hilarious. And again, I want please use to serve and regret. I just want to be
like, I just like high and dry. I think it's so much more douchey. Follow me everywhere. Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast, The Good Sugar Podcast, which is about health and wellness. We're opening up our first location at the end of November on the corner of 3rd and 69th Street. So come down and eat some healthy food. And what's amazing to me is both this show and that show in the top 100 of their respective categories on the old iTunes podcast charts. I don't know what that means, but that is fun to say. We add a song every week to the SDRshow.com/playlist. How could we not add Comforter? Think about Gary thumping away in his little presidential naval suite for 30 seconds. We'll add that to the playlist. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll see everybody next time on the SDR Show. Peace.
For the being a friend, but this is not- feelings back because of him.
And now I can see him on the
number. I made a big, big, big mistake.
I don't mean to disregard your feelings, but I think that he's a fool. He don't know how sensitive you are, and baby, that just ain't cool. Deep inside my heart, from the start, I know I should have been your man.
Lay down and tell me what's on.
Listening to the SDR Show.